Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this gorgeous Monday morning here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe with you. Willie will join us a little bit later in the program. Every time, this time on Mondays, we chat with TD, or talk with TD, whatever you want to call it. His podcast is Talking with TD that he drops every week on Wednesdays. He now joins us. He's the NFL Nation reporter for ESPN and ESPN.com, covering the Titans. Teron, how you doing? How was your weekend?
Hey, what's going on, man? Weekend was great. Hope you guys had an equally awesome one as well.
We did. Alex Smith, I'm going to start there real quick and just get your initial thoughts, just because this has happened in the last, you know, 30, 45 minutes. But Alex Smith has told the NFL that he is going to call it a career, the former number one pick overall. His story is well documented. And he was able to at least come back and play last year for Washington when nobody thought that he was going to, with all the surgeries and the leg issues that he went through over his career. What do you make of the news? Are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised. You know, Alex Smith, his career has been really interesting. And I actually remember the one year, I want to say 2008, where he tried to play. He had a clavicle injury. And I remember being at Candlestick Park, and he was actually put on injured reserve, which meant he was out for the year. And I remember standing right there by the dugout, which is where the players would go in and out, on and off the field. And I remember him walking off the field, and the fans just booed him mercilessly, you know. And it was just – it was a terrible experience. I know it was terrible for him, you know. He just put his head down. And it's just really awesome to see him go from that point to what he did last year, and even what he did in Kansas City. His career was interesting. It was fun to watch, you know, at times, but also frustrating. And I'm proud of what he was able to do, just as far as coming back from that gruesome injury and just, you know, making something out of his career, because it did not start very well at all.
No doubt. Jadeveon Clowney has found a new home. It's in Cleveland with the Browns. Supposedly they were the team that offered him the biggest contract last offseason. He chose to decline and come to Nashville to play for the Titans. And then he had some interesting words to say. I heard you chuckle when I said that, which, you know, big deal, not a big deal. I just thought it was interesting why he would go there with some of his comments. He also says that he wants to continue to show everybody he is an elite player. What did you make of some of his comments that he said to the Cleveland media, and what did you think of him picking the Browns as his next landing spot?
Yeah, I chuckled because I think the comments were completely unnecessary, and it's just very interesting the way things just completely turn around, because I remember when we first spoke to him, that's the Titans media, I remember he was really ecstatic about being able to go into a scheme that he knew would fit.
Right.
Now all of a sudden things didn't work out and you want to blame it on this. I don't think that's the best way to go. I think that's kind of taking the suck away, you know, just to put it bluntly. But, I mean, more power to him. I hope that he is able to get things back on track, because, I mean, you guys know, I've been a staunch defender of his status as a solid player, you know, and I know he's not the best pass rusher as far as sack numbers are concerned, but he is a guy that will help make other people on the team better. So I'm interested to see how, you know, opposite Myles Garrett, how that will work out. But the comments, I don't think that was really the best thing to do. Just chalk it up. You know, it didn't work out for a year. Move on. I don't think it was necessary to say that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was very perplexed on why he would even choose to go there. I think the way I look at it, Teron, is Jadeveon is running out of excuses, right? I mean, I just kind of feel like he's the number one pick overall, and everybody knows the book on him, and he's kind of running out of excuses on, you know, him. That's fine if he needs to tell himself he's elite. I don't think really anybody believes that. The contract doesn't dictate he's an elite player in the league. He keeps getting one-year deals. It's $8 million guaranteed. That's, you know, the league is not telling you you're elite. So, I mean, whatever motivates him is fine. I just, like you said, I just was confused on, it's like, you were a free agent. You chose Tennessee. I mean, you chose, clearly you had a relationship. You knew what they were all about, and you chose to get in there, and it doesn't work out, and then you try to blame it on the scheme and not, you know, they didn't have players that, you know, I got double teamed. It's like, well, didn't you know the roster? So it was just a little head scratching, some of those comments on the way out.
And just real quick, he was double teamed the least out of his career last year. So let's throw that out of the window.
Great stat. So this Thursday will be a week out from the NFL draft. So as we sit here, just shy of a week and a half before the Titans pick in the first round. We did this last week, just as we inch a little bit closer. Gut feeling today, without any of us knowing, if you had to bet, since we like to talk about bets on this show with DraftKings and BetMGM, if you had to bet today, stand pat at 22, move up or move down, where would you slide your chips that you think they'll do?
It's so tough. That's a really tough one. I think Elijah Moore is going to be the pick. But you could trade back and still be able to get him. So it kind of uses both of those scenarios. But I think he's the best fit for what they need. So I'm going to say trade back and get Elijah Moore.
Really? So you think that's going to be the selection? That is interesting.
I don't hate that.
No.
Especially if you can trade back and get more. You know, so do you think
maybe move up in the second round? You know?
Or something like that. Or do you think that you have to take him at the end of the first round?
I think end of the first round will probably be, you know, anywhere from 28 to 32, somewhere in that range. And the good thing is, you know, you could have a team because this Mac Jones hype. I think he's going to fall. So you could have a team looking to trade up for him, or you got one of the tackles, you know, a team will want to, you know, get up there to get a tackle. That's a possibility, too, whether it's Tevin Jenkins. Maybe the Packers want to move up to get him. They need a right tackle, so that would help. Something like that, I think, could work out for the Titans and allow them to get another pick, maybe a third rounder, right? And now you have three third rounders, and you can really stock up in that third round.
All right, last thing on my end, just to get your opinion, because I don't think any of us believe they're at least not going to take one high, a quarterback. They don't need a quarterback. But I just want to get your take on some of these quarterbacks that come out of the lesser-known schools and, you know, whether it's FCS or what have you. I just think it's pretty interesting, the whole Trey Lance talk. And I'm just going to give you my perspective from – I don't watch film like you. I just – in this case, it's just seeing clips, you know, being run on television. I know it's a pretty small sample compared to, you know, what you look at and what these scouts and teams look at. And he's at the first and he won't be the last. In Power 5 schools, there's been quarterbacks, you know, that throw to wide open guys all the time just because they have great athletes and they're better. But I don't envy general managers. Like, how do you determine all the film I see on Trey Lance? He's throwing to wide open guys. So how do you know if he can really make the throws? Because you're not throwing to wide-open guys in the NFL. How do you assess that?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. It's always tough to do that. I think a lot of it comes from just sitting down and talking to them. And then also, let's face the facts. It's you're basically making an educated guess.
Yeah.
You know. And one of the things that I do like about the North Dakota State guys, and this is something that I preached about Carson Wentz, when he was coming out as compared to Jared Goff, you know, Goff was clearly the guy who was going to go first. But I said Wentz is coming into the league more NFL ready than Jared Goff. And the reason why is because at North Dakota State, even though it's not in the SEC or ACC, this school requires a lot of these quarterbacks. Whereas you see them before the play, they're changing protections. They're making different calls. They're actually operating an NFL offense as opposed to guys in offenses like Jared Goff where they look to the sideline and it's a coach holding up a sign of a hamburger with ketchup and mustard, and that's telling you what play to call. You know, these quarterbacks from North Dakota State are actually going in the huddle and giving NFL-level responsibility. So that, I think, is something that you have to look at with a school like North Dakota State. You have to look at that with Trey Lance. And the other thing is you have to look at just their ability to just create, and that's something that helps out. We have a thing, a couple of my friends from Football Game Plan and I, Emery Hunt, who's been on your show, we always say that no matter how good a quarterback is, you don't want him if he's scary. And you could see how a quarterback, whether or not he's scary or not, like Jimmy Garoppolo, you see, you know, he'll see shadows, flashes of other color jerseys, and you see him start flinching. Kirk Cousins has the same thing. And they'll throw the ball away. They think they're throwing it away, but they put it in harm's way and it gets intercepted. Those are things you have to look at. How do they respond when that pocket gets real dirty around them? How do they respond when it's time to improvise, make a play on the run and do those type of things? I think that's something else you have to factor in. But above all, it's never an exact science.
We're talking to Teron Davenport, Titans NFL Nation reporter for ESPN. So I want to go back to your pick for a second. So if let's say that plays out and they take Elijah Moore, whether they stick at 22 or they move back and take Elijah Moore, what are you doing in the second round? Is that where you address corner?
You can address corner in the second round. I think a guy like Asante Samuel Jr., Kelvin Joseph, these are guys that you could get. There's a corner, Robinson out of UCF. He's definitely a really good. That guy, you watch him, man. He likes to tackle, and he's very physical. You know, he'll press you when you need that. So that's another option. And the thing that's so beautiful about this draft for the Titans is it's very deep at positions that they need. Corner, receiver, eventually tackle. You know, that's another option that they could get in the third round.
If they go that route with Elijah Moore and you put the two Ole Miss guys together as a two-headed monster, I mean, you already know what you're going to get out of A.J. Brown. I have no doubt that he's going to continue to just up his game. But do you think that adds another layer, fires him up even more to know that he's got Elijah Moore back there? Because I know he's been very complimentary of him.
Yeah, I think regardless, A.J. Brown, he's a professional, and he's going to go out there. It doesn't matter if I'm out there at the slot with him. He's going to go out there and do what he has to do. So I get, you know, it'll be cool for him to have his homie, his young buck, you know, there with him. But either way, you're going to get what you're going to get out of Elijah Moore, and that's elite-level performance and production and just impact.
Moving to the other side of the ball, we know Jayon Brown is back on a one-year deal. Rashawn Evans, the other middle linebacker, they're going to have to figure out what to do with the fifth-year option, but you know those two guys are going to be there. In your mind, who has more to prove? Is it Evans trying to, you know, to fight for the next contract, and Jayon Brown doing the same thing? Who do you think has more to prove?
Great question. I think they both have the same amount to prove, to be honest with you. I'm going to go with Jayon Brown, though, because here's the thing. Evans, first-round pick, he's already gotten a nice contract. Jayon Brown hasn't really gotten to that point where he has that completely life-altering money, right? And I say that tongue-in-cheek because $5 million will alter my life, alter yours too. But at the level that these guys are on, it's a little bit different. And I think, you know, he's playing for that big contract. I think the fact that he went out there and was on the market, and you see a guy like Matt Milano get that big-time deal, and Jayon Brown doesn't get a deal like that, I think that kind of that gives him even more to prove. So I'm going to go the Jayon Brown route. And, I mean, let's speak the truth. There hasn't really been a defender on that team more consistent than him since 2018 anyway. So, you know, it's about time that he gets his just due.
Do you see a scenario where knowing they could lose one or both of them that they address that position in this year's draft?
I could see them addressing the linebacker position. Chaz Surratt is a guy, you know, out of North Carolina that would be a solid option for them. I still feel that they are very confident in David Long. I had a guy by the name of Grant Stewart out of Houston, a smaller linebacker. He's a lot like Chris Borland, if you remember him. Just you always wonder, like, how the heck is the guy getting to the football all the time? Because he's not the biggest, fastest, or anything like that, but he just manages to make 100 tackles every year, and that's what Stewart is. And I know that the Titans have shown some interest in him. So, yeah, I mean, those are some options.
As we talk about players with something to prove, Kevin Byard has already proven a lot in his career, being a third-round pick, and he earned the contract. We know that last year was simply just not a good year for him, and it was not a Kevin Byard-like year. So from that standpoint, does he need to just get back to where he was, or what do you need to see out of him to kind of make you think that, all right, still a solid player, still somebody that I want on my team?
Yeah, I think with Kevin Byard, you need to just see him be able to play comfortably again. And it just seemed like he was never in a groove last year. And, I mean, Chase, you know, I'm about as high on Kevin Byard as anyone. You know what I mean? And I'm just going to call it what it is, man. Like, he did not have a good year, and especially by Kevin Byard's standards. But I still think if you could get that guy in a comfortable situation where he's not thinking so much and he's just playing and that communication is going smoothly as it should, I think you're going to get great production and just great play out of him. Let him play on the post, you know, and just bait, say, quarterback, excuse me, into making throws and let him pick those off. Let him come down in the box some and blitz off the edge and do the things that he's really capable of doing. I think last year, just being in the scheme, which the players will say is not that much different, but you could tell that, you know, things weren't the same. And you could tell that a lot of the guys were thinking a lot and not playing as fast. So hopefully for Byard's sake and for the Titans' sake, they could go ahead and be able to be more reactionary and not really think so much and just really just play the game. And I think that's what you're going to get out of Kevin Byard. I think he's going to be back on track.
Well, and how much having, you know, Autry, Jeffrey Simmons continuing to get better up front, and then Bud Dupree adding him to the mix. I mean, that's got to help on the back end too, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The front end, I firmly believe the front end always helps the back end. And it goes vice versa. But I think in this case, the front end is going to help a lot more. And quietly, that DeNico Autry signing and putting him next to Jeffrey Simmons, oof. Man, that's gonna be something else, man. And even, you know, Bud Dupree and being able to do the things as far as twists and stunts that they do, it's gonna be fun to watch, and that's something that should help everybody up front and just that whole defense, period.
You think $5 million changes our lives? Yeah, I agree. I said Alex Smith is set for life. I just saw on Spot Rack. Do you know anybody? I'm gonna ask both of you. Unless you've seen it, then it's not as fun. But any idea, I'll start with you. TD, career earnings of Alex Smith. Got a guess?
I'm gonna go $175 million.
Okay. Chase?
It's pretty good. $190 million.
Just under $190 million. Wow. His career earnings.
Yeah, because remember when good he was him. The number one pick, that was when the quarterbacks or whoever it was still there wasn't a cap on it. So he got that, and then he got the big-time deal with Washington. Yeah, could definitely see it.
Almost $200 million.
Yeah,
dollars.
He's good.
He's good. He's good. He gone.
Shoot. Generations are good.
as would I. I gone. See you later. Always appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this, and we'll be checking out your work this week as we get a little bit closer to the draft.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you guys. Take it easy.
Teron Davenport, Talking with TD's podcast, drops on Wednesdays. He joins us on Mondays. He does the Power Hour on Stillman & Company on Thursdays during the 3 o'clock hour. So a lot from TD, and he'll be a part of the draft coverage. Is that correct?
Yes, he will.
Or did I just make that up?
No, you
did
not. Correct.
All right, good. Correct. We're going to have you covered next Thursday and
Elijah
Friday.
Moore, man. Ooh.
Well, we'll discuss that on the other side. Get your thoughts on is that where they need to turn? They've got a lot of choices. I mean, a lot of ways they can go with that first-round pick. All right, let me talk to you about Masvidal and Usman. Yeah, they're going to put on a show. They put on a show last time, and they're hoping to put on a show when they step into the octagon this weekend. And DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC, is putting you in the center of all this weekend's title fight. Yes, pick either main event fighter to win UFC 261, the title fight that's on the line. DraftKings Sportsbook will give you 26-1 odds. Yes, you heard it right. $5 of your money on either fighter to win. And if they walk away with the belt, you cash $130. There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to put your money where your mouth is. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use that code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, turn $5 into $130. If you're title contender, Masvidal or Usman, wins. That's it. That's all you have to do. That code again, 1025GAME, for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook For details, if you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. I just spoke of the our draft coverage. That's going to be next Thursday and Friday, April 29th and 30th, to wrap up the month. That's presented by Founders Brewery, Apple Collision Centers, Freedom Tire Guys, and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. It's going to be a lot of fun. The live draft broadcast Thursday will be at 3rd and Home, Germantown's Bar with a ballpark. Yeah, it's in First Horizon. And Friday will be Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House in East Nashville. So great coverage on Thursday and Friday on these airwaves. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe. Willie will join us in a bit. Predators tonight at home against the Blackhawks at Bridgestone Arena. A chance for you to be in the building with us coming up on This Is What I Know in about 20 minutes, but you'll have to call in and participate. So you like Elijah Moore?
I do. I really do. I think that, and it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that he and A.J. Brown both went to Ole Miss. I just think he's exactly what they need. He adds even more skill at that position. He's a replacement for Corey Davis and potentially could turn into an upgrade from that. I mean, he averaged, I guess, in his last three games, I think it was 13 catches, 200 yards was his average. I mean, that's ridiculous. And, you know, you're asking him to go from college to the pros, and there's obviously going to be some changes there, but can play in the slot, can be your number two, can, you know, who knows what he's going to develop into, but I think he fits. And especially if they're able to move back and not stick at 22, if they get him later in the first round and they can add because of how deep this draft is, because I'll say this, I'd like to see them take more than one wide receiver, you know, get your second, get your number two to A.J. Brown, but go get another one later on. I'd love to see that, get a corner, tackle, all of those positions. If they can add a draft pick and still get him in the first round, I would be all for it. I'd love it.
I can't imagine that they're going to draft two receivers, but I could definitely see one and
Why
see
not?
One high. I don't know. I think they got other positions they need to address.
Yeah, but, I mean, they have the picks to do it. They have, what, 9 picks?
Yeah.
They could do that. I mean, Elijah Moore.
What has a better shot of – okay, so let's talk about the positions of need that they need to address. Offensive lineman. Okay,
yep.
There's one.
Tackle, to be specific.
Right. Someone in the corner. Secondary, a linebacker.
I'd put linebacker.
Pass rusher.
I would put just a, you know, straight up linebacker further down the list. I would go, if I'm just putting together my ranking.
Tight end.
I would go wide receiver. I would go corner, tackle, tight end, linebacker.
I guess what I'm getting at is what positions do you have a better shot of landing kind of that guy later in the rounds? Like, how would you rank those? I think, to me, wide receiver, the more you slide down, the riskier it gets. Like, you know, linebackers,
yeah, but
they get Jayon Brown the fifth round?
Yeah. Yeah, they got him in the fifth round.
I mean, Wesley Woodyard was an undrafted guy, played a long time in the league. I just think, you know, a linebacker guy, you can maybe you find them a little bit later. Tight end later. There's just other positions where I just think it gets riskier. Like, all the times they've tried over the years, and I know it's in the past, I get it, but this is our sample, you know, that we've got for here. All those third and fourth and fifth round, you know, wide receivers, they haven't fared well.
They've gone
through a slew of them, and they come and they go as about as fast as you can blink your eyes.
But, I mean, you're going to have – think about this. Because of the quarterbacks, you're going to have some players get pushed back. It's a deep draft in a lot of different positions, you know, all pretty much everyone except for maybe tight end that the Titans need – So you're going to have some players fall back that generally wouldn't fall that far back. But because it's so deep, that's what's going to happen. So, you know, you could potentially – they get Elijah Moore, who was a 1,000-yard receiver in 2020 with 8 touchdowns. So you get him. And but moving back, you move, let's say, to 27, something like that. That adds another pick somewhere to run throughout the third round. So if you do that, you know, you can still, with your second round pick, let's say corner, you go there, and there would be, you know, Asante Samuel is one. I think Horn's probably gone at that point, but, you know, looking at some others, Tyson Campbell, Greg Newsom, Eric Stokes from Georgia, you know, could be Elijah Molden. You know, those guys could be in there, maybe potentially even in the third round, but you address that in the second or third, and depending on what you get as a part of moving back. And then you find the tight end probably in the third round, maybe the tackle in the third round. And then you start looking at other receivers, see who's there. And I'm not saying reach for it, but if there is a guy that you've identified that could go late day two or day three that you really, really like, then go for it. I just think they have an opportunity to have more of the best player available and it actually work in this draft than they have in the past. I just truly feel that way about this draft class overall.
We shall see soon enough, in about a week and a half. It's all going to happen.
I can't wait.
It is going to be a lot of fun. Big, big series. We'll get into this with a little bit more with Vince at High Noon. There's a lot of stuff going on in Knoxville, so we'll have a good chat with Vince Ferrara at noon. But the big series that we're waiting for all weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, took place in Knoxville. Vanderbilt took the first one Friday night. They fell in the second one in lighter start, which is amazing. Then they bounced back to take the series on Sunday. Let's bring in Max Herz.
Hi, Max.
Max, what did you think of the series at Knoxville this weekend?
Hi, guys. First of all, I want to say you do look really good today, and I can actually say that because I can see you
yes.
on Zoom. You look very good. I thought it went, honestly, about as expected. We found out afterward, the game yesterday, when Tim Corbin did some interviews, that Vandy was without Ethan Smith, who's coming back from COVID, who's one of their main relievers. That definitely changed their pitching plan Saturday. They went to Luke Murphy, their closer, earlier than they would have wanted to in the seventh inning. And that was a big ask for him. It would have been his longest outing ever. He didn't end up closing out the game, and they kind of went into the back end of the bullpen from there. I think if Smith had been available, Vandy would have had a chance to sweep the series. But outside of that, I think Vandy did what they had to do. They played the long ball game a little bit. They played the speed game with Bradfield all over the place on Sunday. I think it went as expected, honestly. I think both teams are great, but Vandy's a little bit better right now.
You could see Vandy had a little bit more oomph than them this weekend. You know, they were coming off that Georgia series. They knew what was at stake. Tennessee was, you know, they were jacked up. But you could, I don't know. I don't know if you guys saw it. I just kind of felt like Corbs' guys had a little bit of extra oomph to them this weekend.
I felt that way.
Anybody else feel that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think they knew that the in-state rival was actually a rivalry again in baseball, and they knew that Tennessee was going to be a threat for them, and they had, in their minds, they had something to prove. And so they wanted to go and take care of business, and I think that that's great. You know, it's great that Tennessee has gotten to the point where they are a competitive team, and, you know, they're – just because Vandy took this series, I mean, Tennessee's not going away. Tennessee is still very good, and I think they showed you that, you know, getting to lighter like they did and being able to win that game. So I certainly think there was a little more to it this weekend and wanted to make up for some things against Georgia. And, you know, now you kind of really are starting to see Vandy come into form and see what happens, you know, as they move on with the schedule. But I'm glad to see this series mean something again.
It certainly does. And it'll be fun when they get a little bit deeper their season. The tournament, we'll see how it all plays out. John Hines speaking with the media here just said that it looks like they're going to roll with the same lineup from Saturday. tonight.
Okay.
So it'll be Eric Branson on that third D pairing with Ben Harper, and Matt Duchene will continue to be on the wing with Eric Halla and Cousins. So
he didn't give an injury update from what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So
you mean on possible players returning?
Yeah, Chris Harris of Channel 4 just said, same lineup tonight as Saturday, no injury update this morning.
Yeah. Yep.
So I don't know. We'll see if they get any of those guys back. You know, they got three games. This is a playoff series. That's how I'm looking at this. One game at home and then two on the road at Chicago. So it'd be nice if at least one, you know, could come back. They just start staggering guys in because, you know, as you go down the stretch, you can use all the bodies you can get back in the lineup, whether it's Forsberg or Tolvanen or whoever.
Yep. Looks like Willie has joined into the mix. Good timing on his part. So we just learned Willie John Hines is going to roll with the same lineup as Saturday night in Carolina. So good. Branson will be you need to put your thing on mute.
Hit that mute.
Yep.
Hit it. There we go.
A little bit of an echo.
I know the drill.
Echo. Echo.
Hey, Willie.
Echo.
I saved your spot for you.
Yeah.
Got my spot.
Well, at the beginning, it was two spots because there was two of them.
Or three. It's actually three. You got to get it down to one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Goodbranson will be in there again alongside Harper. Duchene will be on that third line on the wing. What do you make of Hines rolling with the same lineup tonight and no players coming back? Unfortunately.
Well, you know, if they had guys to come back, there's no question they would use them. But they're not ready. They haven't skated with the team yet. I think maybe you hope to get one of them back later in the week. But you just got to use what you got. I think, you know, and this is not going out on a limb or anything. We know Goodbranson, I think, did okay in his first game. I think his experience makes him, at least on paper, an upgrade with what they've had there. If you take a look, Jeremy Davies has struggled some. You know, he's going to be all right, but these are tough games for him to play at this stage of his career. He's got to get better. And I just think you feel a little bit better with a guy that's played 555 games in his career with the size there. Now, Chicago's a quick team, right? You don't want to be on the wrong side of the puck against them because they've got some speed burners there. But the guy that really is the focus this week is Duchene. I know how bad he wants it. You know, he had some good signs on Saturday in a game that they struggled to get a lot of shots, especially early in the game. You know, he had 9 shot attempts, so there's some good there. But there's a next level that everybody's been waiting for that I know he wants to show. You know, I thought Adam's article, I'm sure you guys talked about it with him earlier, I thought it sort of set the table for what's to come here. You know, you could forget about a lot of stuff if he played a solid 10 games, right? It doesn't even have to be spectacular. If he could just be solid and a contributor, that would make a big difference here. You guys agree?
What's the difference? I don't know what's the difference between solid
scoring and some goals. In his last 9 games he's played, he's got 0 points.
Yeah.
Back to even before he got hurt. He had 8 straight games with no points. 0.
His 8 points in 24 games. So I mean, solid to me would be
let's start with one. Let's start with 1 point. You know, just make a play that helps you win. That's a start.
It's a start, sure.
And you can, and maybe that leads to another play that's made. You know, I think John Hines is really good in that he doesn't go out and tell his players, even the guys that are supposed to be scoring, hey, I've got to have this many goals and this many points from you. You know, there are some coaches that do that. They say, you know what? This is what you're getting paid. This is what your skill set is. I need 30 goals in a season. You know, some coaches do that. John Hines is much more of a, if you play your identity, do the things that you do well, and fit in with the team the way we're playing, I don't care if the result is no points at the end of the night. If you're helping us win, what are you doing to help us to help us win? And I think that I hope would relieve some pressure on some of these guys. And I think they've shown that even when they have been down some weapons, they've actually created more offense than they were when they had everybody and they weren't playing on the same page. So this is another, I think, really important component tonight is they just got beat twice in Carolina. It hurts to lose. They hadn't lost two in a row in a while. But Carolina is really good. So can you put that in perspective, right? Can you take the good things that you've been doing against all the teams and say, you know what, that formula will still work. We just ran into a buzzsaw, right? And what are the things that they could have done better in Carolina? And how much of it is, hey, listen, you just got to tip your cap on those particular nights because Carolina was sharp. You know, they had something to do with the two losses. So I think, I mean, this is such a we say every game is important. You know me, I'm always trying to downplay the importance of every game. But this is so big tonight to get back on track and have that feeling that you have when they take the ice that, you know, these guys are all playing together, they're playing as a team, and they expect good things to happen.
But for me to say solid, to say like, hey, he's been solid, he's got to have a point in the a point per game in the next three. It's got to be a point per game player. And I would like at least one of those to be a goal.
Well, he's got to earn the ice time to do that. Right now he's playing on the third line, and I think that's the right way to go. He's got to earn his way up. He's got to earn his way up to get more minutes to be able to do that. You know, that's the other side of the coin. You'd have people on the outside saying, well, he needs to play more so he can get those points. But that's where I am talking about fitting in with the way the team has been playing.
Well, I'm curious to see what it looks like against Chicago because I think we all agree that they match up better and have this year against Chicago. Show me what it looks like there and what he can do. And, you know, it starts with him tonight. But he's got to contribute, and his contribution is, like you said, points and preferably goals.
But I think that it's important to remember they've been able to score enough and win without him. So that shouldn't put too much pressure on him. So sure. That's where I say, you know, be the guy that's sort of stealth. I think that where he could excel, and I think this is part of what happened on Saturday, is, you know, the Granlund line has played some of those tough minutes. They've been making the plays. You know, Johansson's line is one that you've got to account for. Arvidsson's, you know, been productive. So I don't know that Duchesne's line was the focal point of Carolina's defense, right? I think that'll be the same. You've got some weapons spread apart. And so that's where Duchesne could get some good matchups, especially at home. So take advantage of that. And that's where just, you know, one big play, even if he doesn't score a goal, you know, come up with a big play in a good matchup and help your team move forward. Like this is a game Nashville has done well against Chicago for the most part. In the last game, Chicago outchanced Nashville. Right? Nashville got a shorthanded penalty shot, right? On a bad play by Patrick Kane. They got a power play goal from Tolvanen, who's not available tonight. Power play struggling. And they got a 5-on-5 goal from Luke Cunningham. But if you take a look, Chicago felt pretty good about how they sustained pressure against the Predators. This is a game that the Predators are going to have to play, I think, better to be able to win. 5-on-5 in particular. And you can actually outplay Chicago, but a guy like Patrick Kane could make two plays, right? He can make two great plays, and you're sunk, even though you might have been the better team. That's where a guy like Matt Duchesne, I'd just love to see, you know, even if he's not doesn't have his full game back, if he makes one great play, that would be huge, especially against a team like Chicago.
Chicago sitting 2 points behind Nashville in the standings in that fifth spot. Predators with 49 points, Chicago with 47. Dallas lurking right behind them with 46. Dallas has 3 games in hand on the Predators, 2 games in hand on Chicago. Come back, tell us what you know, and the best one will be in the building tonight. Yes, Predators Blackhawks tickets on the line for the best to wick, but you have to call in and participate. 615-737-1025. 737-1025 is our phone line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. And all you have to do is just tell us what you know. We do that next.
Some things you just know.
I have to know.
Do you think everybody knows?
When you know, you just know. It's time to set the record straight.
join the fun on This Is What I Know with Darren, Donick, and Chase.
We do. We want to know what you know. It's pretty easy. Jump in there. We need participation. This is where you get involved in the show. 615-737-1025. And the best one, you're going to have to earn it. If you don't, then we'll give it to somebody else. We just will. None of us are eligible, but there's plenty of people that want these tickets. So just call in and we'll tell us what somebody. You know. We will. I was going to say Adam, but, you know, he's going to be there, and we're working on his. By the way, he hung up. He didn't even give Max his address, so I don't know what to say. We tried. Again, we've tried. All right, who wants to start? 615-737-1025. Tell us what you know.
I can go.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Go ahead.
This is what I know. Nashville SC, a hard-fought draw on Saturday to start their season, 2-2 against Cincinnati. And I think if, you know, they had, and Gary Smith said this after the game, that he thought Cincinnati came out a little quicker than they did, but could have easily been 5-2 with some of the saves that Cincinnati's goalie made. But what I know is it was fun being on the other side. We went to a watch party in Cincinnati for Cincinnati FC, and what I know is when Nashville SC, when Randall Ayall scored and we cheered, got some looks. Got some
really?
Looks. Kind of had to keep my head down. Got a few looks for that. But it was cool. It was kind of neat to be, you know, be on the other side behind enemy lines to watch that. Their stadium is nice.
Yeah.
Very, very nice. It makes me very even more excited for
Well, why do you say that? How do you know that?
What, their stadium?
Yeah.
We drove by it. Or walked by it.
Actually. I was gonna say, did you go
I didn't
it?
Get to go inside it, but I could kind of peer in there and see. And, you know, I know they've put a lot of money into it. It's got cool lights on it, you know, on the outside. But it was pretty cool to see and just makes me even more excited. I know some of the media had a chance to go to the construction site for our stadium and kind of see what it looked like. So pretty cool.
All right.
And, Willie, you missed this earlier. But I'll just add this. What I know, I got to see a triple play live for the first time in my life.
Oh, cool. So I heard about neat. That.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
And Shane Bieber made history while you were there, right? Did you have the game yesterday?
We didn't go yesterday. Oh. We went Friday night, and then we went Saturday. So I saw Sonny pitch on Saturday, and the Reds win in extra innings. So first time seeing the runner on second roll, too. So that was cool.
This is what I know. Man, it is so exciting just to have some of the fans back, right? It just that extra tick up. Man, it is so lively to see some of these. The Vanderbilt-Tennessee series, which I know we'll talk with Vince about here in the next segment. Man, was that emotional and exciting because of the atmosphere, because of the teams, but also just the atmosphere at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. It was awesome. That was great. Tonight in Smashville, you're going to see a few more people in the arena. The crowd can have an impact on the game. Nashville SC, I'm driving home Saturday after the road game. It was so awesome to see the stadium with, you know, lots of people in there. You know, it's still not full throttle, but it's great. And downtown, my goodness, you know, there's people. There's people buzzing all over the place. You know, those pedal taverns and buses and John Deere's, whatever the heck they have people mobile on, they're everywhere, right? And so it just feels so great to get back to some normalcy. So let's just keep going with the vaccines and getting those shots so we can go to the next level. I know that's the message from so many people right now, but, man, I just cannot wait to see what these stadiums look like full throttle. Like, I watched a lot of Dodgers Padres. I don't know why, just late at night, that was the game it was on. Great games. And the crowd was into every pitch. Man, I missed that last year. It was just sinking into me how much we got by without that, right, for the last several months. So let's just keep moving in this direction. I know so many people are working hard to get the process done efficiently, but, man, I can't wait. So that's what I know.
This is what I know. Congratulations to Belmont baseball coach Dave Jarvis. Winning his coach in program history. So good for him. They had a doubleheader sweep of Murray State over the weekend. I think it was on Saturday, and that got him his 664th win to become the winningest coach in program history. So congratulations to Dave Very Jarvis. Cool. He's been there 24 years. He started there as their coach when they were NAIA and, of course, guided them into Division I baseball. So really a job well done by Dave Jarvis, winningest coach in program history for the Bruins. And also I just learned what I know is the number one recruit in the country, as SportsCenter just aired this live. He just committed to Gonzaga. I mean, that doesn't tell you where college basketball is right now. The number one recruit in the country, Chet Holmgren, just said, yeah, I'm going to be a member of the Zags. Not Kentucky, not Kansas, not Duke, not North Carolina, not Michigan State, not Michigan. Nope, I'm going to Gonzaga. Tell you what. Times have changed. I don't even know what we call them anymore. I mean, what are they? They're not mid-major.
No,
I don't even know what you call their.
They're kind of their own category.
I know. They're not blue blood. They're just, I don't know what they are, but it's working. We know that. But yeah, number one. Who would have thought, right? Who knew that we would ever say, hey, the Zags just landed the number one recruit in the country?
If you've noticed, it's not like the guys that they have these last few years have been, like, I think when they started, they were doing it overachieving, right? That was how they got started. They had some guys, they were like, hey, what a great little team, Gonzaga. You know, then over the years, all of a sudden, they're starting to get, they had that niche where they were getting guys from Europe, from Australia, you know, and finding guys like, man, Gonzaga keeps coming up with these great. Now they are completely in the mix for the top recruits now. It just happened before our eyes. Like, boom, they're getting guys. Like Suggs, he could have gone anywhere. Right, it's not like that guy was. I don't know if he was the number one recruit, but he was as good as anybody.
He was a high recruit. He was not the number one recruit, but the number one recruit.
Now
in the
they're
country.
Getting number ones.
Wow,
Mark, you're doing a heck of a job.
615-737-1025. Let's go to Nate on our phone line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. What do you know?
This is what I know. It is still impressive for a baseball fan to make the one-handed, bare-handed catch with a beer in his hand. But when he is holding a silver bullet with the lid and it's obviously closed, the impressive meter drops. After the Braves game last night, SportsCenter showed a fan catching a home run with a silver bullet. And granted, the catch itself was impressive since he had to bend down to the next row below him in order to make the catch. But SportsCenter made it sound like it was the fan beer catch of the year. He was holding a closed beer can. It's not even close to that time when a fan caught a ball while holding a baby in an open cup of beer.
Yeah, no, that was impressive.
Was that the A's game? Where did that happen? I don't remember.
I don't either. I just remember.
I think it was the A's.
Well, we're all a little fuzzy because we went through a period of time where you couldn't make a catch like that because you couldn't be at the game.
It's true.
I think it was an A's game, I think.
Did anybody, on a related note, see the guy at Dodger Stadium with the nachos?
No.
Oh, my gosh. You've got to find it. It is hysterical. A guy's got to play the nachos just on the other side of the wall. The ball lands right in the guy's arms, but it splashes and splatters the nacho cheese all over the guy's shirt. But he made the play, and he holds the ball up. All the fans are going nuts. He's got cheese all over himself. So Justin Turner, who hit the home run, sends him another thing of nachos, number one. So that first he gets a plate of nachos, and then they bring him a Dodger sweatshirt so he has something to wear because his shirt is just toast. But that's the sacrifice we're talking about as a fan to make the play.
Let's go to Greg. Greg, what do you know?
Hey, gentlemen. So what I know could actually be used on you just made the list as well. But what I know is Jared Stillman does not actually watch or pay attention to the games that he says he does, at least based off of his own rant that he did Friday. I just happen to have the radio on, and he's ranting about the Predators and how Ryan Ellis needs to be taken off the pairing with Roman Josi and put on the pairing with Ekholm. And if memory serves me correctly, since he's been back from injury, that has been the pairing that he's been on.
There has been different combinations,
but he has been playing mainly with Ekholm.
Yeah.
I think Benning's been up there with Josi.
What they've done is they've tried to do a little mixing and matching to keep the top three guys, Ellis, Ekholm, Josi, on the ice the most and sort of protect the other three. So, there has been a lot of Ellis and Ekholm.
Greg, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We must go. We got to get to Vince. We got to go east. A lot to talk about with him. Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal. Just kick off the third hour. That's next.